experiencing is a podcast called I'll Have a Beer and Talk, a show recorded in an undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, in which I, your host Gary, tells you about a beer, tastes the beer, then drinks the beer, while I give you a summary of a couple interesting technology stories that you may have missed during the 24/7 coverage of infuriating tweets from a public figure whose name shall not be said. You know, Captain, every year of my life, I grow more and more convinced that the wisest and the best is to fix our attention to the good and the beautiful, if you just take the time to look at it. Good and beautiful things like beer! And there goes the randomizer, which will select this week's beer from the amazing selection I keep here in the All Have a Beer and Talk bunker! And there we go. Thank you, randomizer. I shall be imbibing Tiranana Brewing Company's The Devil Made Me Do It Imperial Coffee Porter, a 7.5% ABV American Porter. Much like the American version of any beer style, the American take on the English porter amps it up. In this case, that's by adding more hops, using smoked malts in the brewing process, or by adding coffee or chocolate, which complements the traditional porter's burnt taste. The bottle here claims that this beer is a big old black beer with oatmeal silkiness, full-bodied with soothingly rich coffee flavors, devilishly delicious. Yippee! And now with the power of science, I switch to the beer mic. I don't know if you could tell from the sound of the beer mic there, but that was a really insanely smooth pour. There's almost no friction when pouring into my glass here, and there's this wonderful odor of coffee and just toasty notes already permeating the entire bunker's air supply here. The beer itself is pitch black, as a good porter should be, with a tan white head. You know, exactly the way it should look. Let's see if it tastes like the way it should taste. Oh, it's got wonderful, wonderful toasty notes, and there's almost like a warmness to it in the first sip, and then it's just a beautiful, beautiful coffee flavor throughout it. I wish I could have this in the morning instead of just regular coffee. Make me a lot happier. Hey, you're a 21st century person, right? Zero attention span and crap memory? Well, according to Lifehacker, you should start talking to yourself like a crazy person, because it will help you understand and retain knowledge. Ulrich Boser, speaking with the Harvard Business Review, says that talking to yourself is not so much a conversation, but more like self-explaining. Kind of. Well, actually, in my case, it's like mansplaining to myself. Anyway, by slowing down your thought process and crafting questions to ask yourself directly about something you just learned, you set what you have learned into your memory. You have to organize and translate your thoughts into your preferred spoken language to do it. Speaking out loud is an important component for memory retention, as it keeps you focused on the question by making sure it makes sense in a conversational format and allows you to follow a thought process to its hopeful conclusion. In fact, one study showed that those that explained to themselves ideas learned almost 3 times more than those people that kept their ideas stuck in their head. It's a little similar to how the physical act of writing something down increases memory retention as well. Turn the knowledge into something physical. If you find you have difficulty in remembering things, might I suggest talking out loud to yourself? Also, you should practice what's called summarization. After you read an interesting Wikipedia article or watch a cool documentary, explain to yourself out loud what you just learned. Imagine telling a friend about something interesting that you read on the internet, maybe over a beer. That sounds familiar. You'll be surprised what you actually remember. So to increase your knowledge, embrace your inner raving derelict and talk to yourself. And you can be like me and record those ramblings and turn it into a podcast. In the future, after robots have taken all of our jobs, the only thing left for us humans to do to make a living would probably be teaching those robots how to do things. And unless you're a programmer, you can't teach a robot how to do those things. Simple things like how to grab an object and drop it in a bucket, right? Well, according to The Verge, that isn't exactly true anymore. In fact, you can teach a robot simple things just by demonstrating those simple things. And that robot can then teach other robots those simple things. Hopefully you don't show them how to kill. The new robot teaching technique utilizes a program called C-Learn, which is spelled C-L-E-A-R-N. C-Learn works by combining the two methods normally used to teach robots a task, one in which a programmer specifies the exact actions to be taken, and the other in which movement is plotted out with motion capture data. With C-Learn, the robots are taught a series of basic movements, examples given like how to be parallel to an axis or how to move in a plane. Then an operator uses a 3D model of the robot in a simulation of the workspace, moving the robot like a puppet to do specific things, like using its arm to open a door. C-Learn takes the two data points and combines them, letting the robot figure out how to move across a room without falling over, and open a few doors of various sizes and heights, without having to be told how to do each individual action. It learns how to apply basic actions in a wide range of situations. This is similar to how us squidgy humans learn, by observation and then applying our own general knowledge to accomplish a task. The robots are taught, this is how you generally move in the world, and this is generally how you interact with objects. Then are told to do something, like, say, lift a tray so it's parallel to the floor, which they then do without dropping it. Which is actually one of the demonstrations that was shown off by the researchers that created C-Learn. The robot was shown how to lift the tray once, as well as how to grab an object and drop it in a bucket, and remove a cylinder from inside another cylinder. Mundane, sure, but the fact that no one had to hard code the robot to do these things is pretty amazing. What's also amazing, because of the generality of the learning system, what one robot learns can be easily transferred to another robot. Assuming it has the same physical design and capabilities, it can accomplish the same tasks with minimal human intervention just by copying over the code. So in the future, I could, say, teach a robot how to write at the show, leaving me free to just drink and talk and not have to do any writing? Hooray, future! Oh, passwords. I know I've talked a few times about systems designed to do away with them entirely, but for now, we're stuck with them, and they are what we use to protect our digital information. And regular people, aka norms, can't abide by the currently accepted password policies of most companies. You know the one. Your password must contain one uppercase letter, one lowercase letter, one number, one special character, and be between 8 and 50 characters in length, and must be changed every quarter to something significantly different than the previous quarter's password. The U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology, colloquially known as NIST, understands that human brains simply can't even with those password requirements. In fact, forcing people to create complex passwords on a frequent basis actually ends up being a terrible policy. NIST explains, analyses of breached password databases reveals that the benefit of such rules is not nearly as significant as initially thought, although the impact on usability and memorability is severe. Basically, creating a complex password prevents a ne'er-do-well from just waltzing into your system, but the time and energy involved in constantly having to reset users' passwords and then forcing them to constantly create new passwords containing one uppercase letter, one lowercase letter, one number, one special character, and be between 8 and 50 characters in length, is basically time wasted. NIST has updated its guidelines for password security, simplifying it for the end user. The password must be long, up to 64 characters, and contain spaces. No more uppercase, no more lowercase, and no more special characters. The idea is for people to come up with memorable phrases themselves, which are far easier for the inefficient human memory to set and recall. I remember years ago the webcomic XKCD posted a comic about the very same problem. String together a bunch of unrelated words and you'll remember it, but a computer can't even understand it, with the example password being correct horse battery stapler. It ties into the memory palace memorization technique. To remember something complex, picture in your mind a strange thing combined with what you're trying to remember, and what do you know? You'll remember it. You should also speak it out loud. The new guidelines will very probably be adopted by many private companies, including the one that pays me and provides me with adequate, affordable health care. So now when I'm helping onboard new employees and creating their passwords, I can tell them they just need to remember something weird a friend or relative keeps repeating. Or just remember some of the more random thoughts I utter aloud in their presence, like Hogarth Zeppelin Hangover Time Lash or Narwhal Generator Ale Fruit Bat Freshmaker. Just don't use a strange quote from something in the popular media, like, There is nothing more useless than a lock with a voice print, or I wouldn't even say no to a salami sandwich, because that would be kind of easy to figure out. Believe it or not. Or you could use the phrase, I learned how to make paper at Pulp and Deckel. Speaking of which, hey, you can learn how to make paper at this show's sponsor, Pulp and Deckel. Pulp and Deckel is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, and by creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products. Browse the rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out our mobile papermaking plans by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckle.com. We are inching ever closer in completing construction of our new teaching space and should be having a very exciting open house soon. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might even give you something special. Engadget had a little story about ordering burger delivery through a PlayStation, which of course reminded me of Pizza Tech, so I had to read a bit, then tell you about it. Pizza Tech is the term I've come up with, which is fast food companies' attempts to sell you more of their comfort food by utilizing clever technology-based vectors. If you live in Spain, this story will be of special interest to you. Hola. Burger King has partnered with Sony to offer burger-loving gamers on the PlayStation Network in Madrid membership in an exclusive club. One where they can, one, jump into online games with esports professional gamers, and two, have home delivery of Burger King foods directly to their homes in those matches. Fun fact, Spain has a huge home delivery ecosystem, one of the largest in the world, and Spain is also Burger King's largest market, rivaled only by the United States, USA, and Germany. Weird. The name of this special club is Burger Clan. The convergence of the big market Burger King has in Spain and the growing number of esports fans in the gaming world is a perfect storm of potential profit for the multinational hamburger monarchy. 55% of esports fans are between 21 and 35 years old, with an average income of $76,000. I wish I made $76,000 a year. But then I'm not 21 to 35 years old. Anyway, gaming esports fans have money to burn, and most eat meat on a regular basis and don't like to leave their living space, so Burger King stands to make a lot of money with this endeavor. The article also runs down the history of food advertising in video games, which appears to have started in 1990 with the video game company Capcom and, hey, guess what? Pizza Tech leader Domino's collaborating on a game featuring the, at the time, Domino's mascot, the Noid, in a platformer for the Nintendo Entertainment System called Yo! Noid. I wonder if that was any better than the 7-Up branded game Cool Spot. I actually remember both of those games. Although nothing could ever hold a candle to Burger King's Xbox and Xbox 360 game Sneak King, though. Hey, Burger King and Microsoft, where's an updated version of that Sneak King for my Xbox One? Eh? I'm sure you've heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is also known as the Pacific Trash Vortex. And if not, well, it is an area in the middle of the Pacific Ocean whose size ranges from 700,000 up to 15 million square kilometers, which is roughly 270,000 to 5,800,000 square miles, using good old American imperial units, and it is a conglomeration of plastic wastes, chemical sludge, and other debris that are collected and trapped by the Pacific Current. Gross. It's a rather sobering physical sign of how we humans as a species have polluted the planet, but according to Digital Trends, a nonprofit has come up with a plan to clean it up, along with other similar, quote, marine trash vortices, end quote, across the planet. Ocean Cleanup proposes using a series of drifting floaters made from high-density polyurethane designed to hold a solid screen of fiber-reinforced thermoplastic polyurethane underwater as the whole apparatus is towed against the current by a sea anchor behind a ship. So it's kind of like dragging a sail behind you underwater, collecting inorganic material as it drifts through the ocean. Because of its solid design, and the fact that it will float above the ocean floor, it will allow sea life to go around or under it instead of being trapped like with a traditional dragnet. Once the screen is full of trash, a support vessel will come in and vacuum up all the debris, collecting it for transport to the mainland for proper sorting, recycling, and, if needed, responsible disposal. According to computer modeling of this proposed system, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch could be reduced in size by 50% within 5 years. And this isn't just a pipe dream. Ocean Cleanup has raised $31.5 million from donors so far and hope to start a proof-of-concept pilot mission this year in late 2017 with a full-blown design going into operation in mid-2018. If this sounds awesome, which it does, you can check out their progress by visiting theoceancleanup.com. That is theoceancleanup.com. Collecting all that solid mass is great, but unfortunately it won't really work on oil spills. Oil spills suck because it's kind of hard to tell how ocean life truly gets affected by this beyond very obvious signals, because you can't exactly ask a fish how it's been doing lately, unless you're Aquaman. However, according to Gizmodo, it is now possible to see how dolphins are doing. A research team has figured out how to use a breathalyzer. Yes, the thing that can tell you how drunk you are on dolphins. Why the hell are they doing this? Well, it's a quick way to determine how healthy dolphins are. The team published their findings in the journal Environmental Science and Technology. Getting a dolphin to use a breathalyzer isn't exactly easy. You can't just put a mask over the snout and then tell them to blow. Dolphins are netted, transferred to a research boat, then have a modified breathalyzer carefully placed over their blowhole. The team worked in Barataria Bay, which is in the Gulf of Mexico near Louisiana, an area severely affected by the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill. By comparing the breathalyzer results from those dolphins with previous results collected from a test group of managed dolphins in San Diego, they determined that the Barataria dolphins showed signs of respiratory problems resulting from swimming in water with a large amount of oil. This aligns with past research of dolphins, both alive and dead, that had been exposed to oil, showing lung and reproductive problems. By showing that a breathalyzer can be used to determine dolphins' health, the researchers have added another tool to help the second most intelligent species on the planet stay alive and thrive. Marijuana. Despite what the man tells you, it's a harmless drug that many of my peers responsibly enjoy that gives them a nice sense of euphoria and a relaxed attitude. In my case, it makes me nauseous. I don't know why. I am aware that that is actually the opposite effect it should be having. Maybe I'm from Bizarro World? I don't know. Anyway, recent research suggests that I may want to toke up as I get older to be able to keep up with the youngsters, according to research I read about on New Scientist. Andreas Zimmer led a team at the University of Bonn in Germany to study the effects of low doses of THC, which is the most active ingredient in marijuana, on the most intelligent form of life on this planet. Of course, I'm talking about mice. The team has been studying the mammalian endocannabinoid system, which I'm pretty sure I've talked about before. It's a biological system involved in balancing out stress responses, and THC mimics the molecules generated by the system that calm us down when we're totally stressed out, dude. During their research, the team noticed that mice with a genetic mutation that affects the proper functioning of the endocannabinoid system age faster and have stronger cognitive decline as they age than mice without the mutation. That got them thinking, maybe giving elderly mice a jolt in their endocannabinoid system would have the opposite effect. They gathered mice and grouped them by age. Youngsters, which were about 2 months old, middle-aged mice, which are about a year old, and the elderly mice at 18 months old, and gave them a small but steady dose of THC. And by small, I mean not enough to cause psychoactive effects, so they didn't see any trails. After a month of small and steady tokes, they put the mice through a series of cognitive tests, like sending them into mazes or having them attempt to recognize other mice. The results were intriguing. In the control group, which had no doobie to pass on the left-hand side, the young mice predictably performed better than the middle-aged and elderly mice. However, in the party group, young mice performed worse than the youngsters in the control group, but the middle-aged and elder mice performed as well as the non-THC younger mice. Looking a little deeper, it was shown that the THC boosted the area of the brain involved in memory formation by increasing the number of connections between brain cells and the hippocampus. Zimmer believes that too much or too little endocannabinoid stimulation is actually harmful. Younger mice, and also younger humans, have a more active endocannabinoid system, so an influx of THC overstimulates it. But older mice, and by extension older humans, have a much less active system and can benefit from a little THC now and then. The next step for the team in their research is human trials! Because smoking weed is kind of terrible when trying to figure out an accurate dosage for the most beneficial effect, the team will use purified THC. The dosing is important. Smoking marijuana is very different, Zimmer said. I don't know, I prefer using beer as a relaxant, but if the pot does actually help stave off the dumbening as I get older, maybe I should give it another try? And that's a big maybe. Hey, intelligent life listening, I have a favor to ask. I'd like your help in making the show. It doesn't take a lot. I am very frugal. And because I believe in choice, here's three options if you'd like to lend a hand. First, my voice is for hire. I can do voiceover work, voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. If you have an idea for a podcast, I can help you refine it and make it a reality. If you feel you have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddecal.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. Plus, this show is on iTunes, the most visible and popular podcast distribution platform in the world for some reason. If you could see it in your heart to give the show a 5-star rating and maybe write a nice little review, it'll help make the show more noticeable by those pesky algorithms that seem to run our lives in this modern world. The more reviews I have, the more chance my show has in showing up as a suggestion for people looking for podcasts that are beer and or technology related. And the more the people that listen, the more they might be willing to lend me support, like by helping the show financially on Patreon. Yes, if you believe my drunken ramblings about beer and technical knowledge for about 15 to 20 minutes each week is something you enjoy, and it's worth at least $1 a month, you can become my patron at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Come on, go there and throw some money at me. Make it rain. You'll be joining some other really amazing individuals that already borrow me $1 a month. And for those very attractive and charismatic individuals, mahalo! And I drank the last of the Imperial Coffee Porter. It was so good. That means it's time for me to go. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, animals, plants, aliens, ghosts, and alien ghosts about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddecal.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihabitradio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!